Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck and I'm your host. We are going to be discussing a little bit more details on that so-called silver squeeze at the start of the week, as well as how the precious metals and markets broadly fared throughout another volatile week and another week where investors seem more than willing to move into markets and more risk on assets. I'm happy to report that I am kicking off the show with Axel Merk, Chief Investment Officer at Merk Investments. To keep up to date on Axel's daily thoughts, I recommend following him on Twitter at Axel Merk. Axel, let's start off with that so-called short squeeze in silver. We had some of the Reddit contingent, I guess, jumping on board of that trade, all because, and it's something we've heard before from kind of the precious metals bugs, is that JP Morgan and some other institutions hold a massive short position in silver, and these traders, or maybe some of them, were going after that short position. I feel like this narrative has been muddied a little bit because of the way the futures market works with silver and precious metals, a bit different than some of these lagging stocks that these traders were able to push around in prior weeks. Give us a little summary on the silver short position that we hear about from JP Morgan and what actually happened in your eyes earlier this week.
Sure. Great to be with you. First of all, there's a vast difference between having a quote-unquote squeeze on a fairly thinly traded stock that's heavily shorted versus the silver market, which is, it's not the largest market in the world, but it is substantially larger than any one of those securities are. So let's keep that in mind. You need a lot of actors to get things moving. And then the sort of positioning that many of these corporates have, the financial institutions have, a lot of that is related to helping manage kind of hedging on the production side for corporates and so forth, and not so much on the speculative side. But even there, the producers aren't hedging much in the production these days. And then more importantly, the one thing we do see is on a weekly basis, the CFTC, the Commitment of Traders report. And we monitor this week in, week out, and there was just not an extreme positioning. And similarly, the market makers, right, that short the ETFs and to some degree to make a market, none of those positions were extreme. And so you're starting off with a market that's just far broader, far more liquid. And then what happened, of course, when the retail goes in and starts buying, sure, you can sweep empty the inventory of some coin dealers. I'm sure you can move the market a little bit. But as we've seen, it's all but fizzled out. And the reason is these markets are just too large and the positioning wasn't extreme enough. So this quote-unquote squeeze was more of a hug. Now, all that said, don't get me wrong, the influence of those sort of boards is here to stay, maybe not to the same extreme as we've seen in some of these specific securities, but keep in mind that a lot of these folks, let's say, call them couch potatoes that have gotten a taste of trading, those aren't just 18-year-olds. There are also many, let's call them echo boomers, 30-year-olds. They are starting to get into their higher income years. They have disposable income. And so, and obviously some people got a stimulus check. Now, by all means, many need it for the daily bread. But these are young people that are risk-friendly, and rightfully so, right? I mean, not rightfully so exactly everything that they're doing, but rightfully so that they have a greater risk appetite than many others. And so I think they will contribute to, let's just call it a higher noise to signal ratio in the market going forward.
So Axel, one thing that I found so interesting about that silver squeeze, let's call it, is it does show how much larger the silver market is, because it really worked its way up to a strong resistance level and then could not break through there. It's right where it turned around, right around that $30. Just shows that while these guys could move price in the short term, it was relatively short term, and it was also muted compared to some of the moves we saw in stocks. But let me ask you, in a longer term sense, has there been any damage done to the silver market because of that so-called squeeze? Was there positives that came out of it? Where do you stand?
Well, in some ways, I mean, we've talked for years how these markets are broken. If anything, this showed that these markets actually work, that they are able to shake these things out. Now, that said, if you talk about quote-unquote damage, sure. The folks who rented a coin dealer and bought a coin, maybe there were folks who thought of buying, let's, for the sake of example, they wanted to buy 10 silver coins this year and bought 5 now to quote-unquote squeeze the market. Will they reallocate their budget and buy more than 10 coins this year, or will there be now a lull because the folks have already bought their coins? At the flip side of that, maybe you got new people who got aware of the silver market and will be more active going forward. I'm very reluctant to say that there's damage, except, of course, fear not, the regulators will probably come crashing down on some of this to investigate things. And I'm not so sure whether only good will come of it. And just on a serious note, briefly, it is illegal to kind of pump up a stock, then sell it, and then see it, then dump it afterwards. And so while a lot of this was just crowdsourced ideas, I'm pretty sure there will be some thought leaders, influencers, as ever we may call them, to have pumped up the stocks, sold them, and then there's going to be media reports on the granny who lost her savings on the way down. Probably going to more happen in these individual securities. But and then some pros got involved in that as well. So we'll have that is where we see the damage that we can potentially damage confidence in these markets because of regulators pointing out some of the misconduct that probably happened along the way, probably just because of the masses of people that got involved. I'm sure some people kind of crossed some red lines along the way somewhere.
Oh, I'm sure they did. And yeah, there are going to be a lot of stories about the poor little retail investor getting sucked into these trades and not being active enough to really follow along and losing a lot of money. It's sad to see, but unfortunately, that seems to be what these markets generate time and time again. Let's talk about the broad precious metals, though, because nearing the end of the week, we were in a corrective phase. You and I are recording this late in the day on Thursday. The markets are closed, but Thursday, bad day for the precious metals. However, you still can make the argument that, especially when it comes to gold, it's still narrowly hanging in this trading range and those lows that we saw at the tail end of last year around 1770. Silver is still right in the middle of its trading range, trading a bit more like an industrial metal, or at least that's supporting it. What's your general take on these precious metals in this now almost 7-month correction that we're in?
Yes, let me just make one more comment on the previous topic. The we talk about coin buying coins versus the futures market. I'm certainly recommending anybody dealing these markets. I just like to remind people of the negative oil prices we have seen. You got to know the small print when you're dealing in anything, really, and especially on derivatives. So you better know what you're doing before you touch any of this. To the broader question that you're raising, we've had reasonably good unemployment numbers. There's a chance that a fairly substantial stimulus might get passed. And while that may be inflationary, the current interpretation of the market appears to be that will get the economy maybe to grow a little bit faster. That means bond yields have been selling, and the big competition, especially the gold, is when you get rewarded in the fixed income market for holding bonds. And so then on a relative basis, gold becomes a little bit less attractive. The most quote-unquote surprising thing is how well precious metals, gold in particular, has been holding up. And I think it is because I always say there are three types of investors. There is the long-term investor who buys for diversification. There's the long-term investor that buys because they think real interest rates will remain very low to negative. And then there's the speculator. And it's the speculator that likes to jump in and out of a trend that maybe we're losing some here because there's short-term a different direction. And in recent weeks, the correlation for the price of gold and equities have been elevated. It's starting to break down. That's a good thing. Obviously, you would prefer to break down with gold going up, right? But the breakdown in itself, I think, is a good thing. But to the fundamental story, gold doesn't pay a yield. So it's just a brick. And that is worthy of holding when the cash in your pocket, at least that's my interpretation, when the cash in your pocket or retains its value or appreciates. Now, you tell me what the odds of that are in the context of all the spending that we have and whatnot. And so we just said bonds are falling, yields are rising. Well, ultimately, these are to a significant extent a reflection of the rate hikes the Federal Reserve will do. And so if you think that the Federal Reserve is going to get all tough, well, by all means, you may want to hide and get out of gold. But if you think that the Federal Reserve is going to keep rates low, if anything, interest rates net of inflation are likely to get more negative. To put this in a different context, we do a lot in the currency space. And whenever a country has higher than expected inflation, often the currency appreciates. You would think it should go down. But the reason why it appreciates, at least on the day of the announcement, is because the perception is, oh, the central bank is going to do the right thing and raise rates. And then guess what? A few weeks later, the currency is weaker because guess what? Central banks has not raised rates. And so these dynamics, they're a tad more complicated. But the short of it is, if you listen to the daily news flow, you're bound to be confused. And the question is whether medium-term price of gold is going to be sustained. And I'm more in the camp that with a Fed that's firmly committed to letting the economy run hot and inflation go high, I think there's a very good chance that the price of gold will be just fine in the medium term.
Okay, that's good to hear. But to your point about rates, though, the market is setting still kind of the long end of the curve. And we've seen the 10-year yield more than double now, just over the last couple months. That is significant. Obviously, that's weighing on the precious metals as well. But how long do you think the Fed will let that happen? Does the Fed have control over the long end? This is noteworthy, even though the 10-year yield is still just barely over 1%.
Exactly. These are ranges, right? And then, yes, it's significant from the low. The question is, how far can this go up? If the last year, I think the last time the Fed kept rates at zero for, I think, 7 years or so, and often the market is ahead of what the the Fed is going to do. And this time around, the Fed is crystal clear that they don't want to do anything. Now, to some extent, it's trying to talk down the yield curve to keep those rates low. But I think it's quite credible that Powell wants to let the economy run hot eventually. I mean, not that that's going to happen this year. And so I think it's a very difficult argument to make that the rates are going to go substantially higher from here anytime soon. Now, you're asking whether the Fed has control over that? Not really. It has control as long as confidence in what the Fed is doing. And one of the reasons the Fed wants to, or at least playing with the idea of moving from buying a certain amount of bonds each month to yield curve control, is because they want to buy less. But the moment they move towards, and by just saying, hey, we're not going to let the yield go up beyond a certain percentage points, the moment they do this, they have a red line in the sand, and that's something the market will at some point be testing. Not anytime soon, probably, but at some point down the road. And so if and when that does happen, well, at the very least, expect more volatility as the dynamics play out.
Sounds like that's going to be a constant this year, is volatility. But we talk a lot about the Fed, and rightfully so. The Fed does hold a lot of power in domestic markets and international markets. And quite frankly, all the central banks are the main ones, the major ones, are reading off the same playbook. Are you seeing any other central banks, though, that you think could start to take the lead and say, we're raising rates, we're not as dovish as we were because of the pandemic, maybe because the pandemic might be getting behind us?
It remains to be seen. New Zealand just had excellent unemployment numbers, for example, but I don't think they're going to hike rates anytime soon. I mean, right now, we've seen really a race to zero around the world in the major countries, right? We had Chinese New Year's coming up, and there are some short-term fluctuations because of liquidity and how they manage the markets. But I don't think anybody is in the mood to raise rates. The Swedish Riksbank, they had negative rates, and they said that it makes no sense. They went back to zero. But the Bank of England just came out and said, dear banks, let's get ready for negative rates. Now, that said, as the announcement was made, the sterling actually appreciated, at least for the day. And the reason there was, they said the banks aren't ready yet for negative rates. And so, if anything, that expectation of lower rates has been taken out of the picture. And so, yeah, the discussions are around how to get more stimulus in place. And in the European Central Bank, they're upset that some of the programs in the various alphabet soups that they have don't have enough of a pickup.
Yeah, they have been. Well, they've been disappointed at what they've been doing, trying to spur some sort of growth in inflation, just like all the other central banks. How are you balancing out when it comes to currency moves? the different central bank policies, because in all fairness, as easy as the US is, it does seem like the ECB is just as easy and can toy with some other policies that the Fed still is resisting.
Well, there's slight difference in the different central banks. The Canadians are probably more reasonable than any of the other ones, but hey, what else is different up north, right? But we are near zero just about anywhere. The broader theme, we had since last March a broader weakening in the dollar. Now, in recent days, the dollar has appreciated, but I do think we've entered a secular bear market for the dollar. And so on a broader basis, we have a global reflationary kind of trend, which means everybody around the world is adding fiscal and monetary stimulus. And when that happens, historically speaking, at least in our analysis, the dollar tends to weaken and the money is going into more of the quote-unquote higher beta currencies. And so I just mentioned the New Zealand dollar, the Australian dollar. Those sort of currencies, or even the Swedish krona, might benefit. Now, on a day we're talking, that's not the case. But that's the trend we are seeing. Emerging markets should also benefit. It's just of that people borrow in US dollars and then make investments in these countries, and that translates to being dollar short. And then if we got a kind of we can get a U-turn, that could be quite abrupt. And then we get a squeeze. We talked beginning about the squeeze, right? And we get the squeeze and a run back to the dollar. And then people realize, well, maybe they don't want to be in the dollar anyway, and it starts all over again. But as these things progress, I do think over the coming years, there's a very good chance that because of that attempt, at least, to reflate the global economy, that the dollar will be in a broader weakening trend, which in turn, of course, is a tailwind to precious metals.
So do you see inflation picking up then in the near term? Let's say first half of this year, even into the second half of this year, is this inflation narrative of rising inflation, is it finally going to take hold in a more sustainable effect?
Well, first of all, inflation isn't just a uniform trend higher. We'll see it in pockets. Second, in the short term, yes, we'll see flare-ups. And that's simply because the year-over-year comparisons, especially as we head into the lockdown months, are just going to be mind-boggling. And so we'll have some price distortions where these indicators will all over the place. That is not, though, the other part of your question, sustainable. That will evolve. The thing I'm more concerned about is what's going to happen if Powell actually gets what he wants. And that's going to happen at some point if we don't have another shock before. I mean, the unemployment rate is going to go lower. We'll let this economy run hot. We'll have shortages left and right. We already have some shortages in some areas. I heard one of the big car manufacturers are stopping productions because they don't get some chips and whatnot. We'll get more shortages at some point. We'll run this economy hot. And then if the Fed really only wants to start raising rates when we are in that situation, we're going to be in a very unstable environment where we'll have high inflation. If they raise rates, the economy is going to plunge. They're scared of a taper trend. They'll do a U-turn. And so that's the sort of environment that I see. It's rather unstable. In the short term, sure, some people will be jumping up and down. Look, I told you inflation is jumping up. But then the next 2 months later, those numbers are going to come down again. So what's going to happen in the coming months, I don't think, is the sustainable part. The sustainable part, if one could call it such, as the instability I see a year and a half, 2-3 years down the road.
All right, interesting. Final comments then. We talk a lot about stimulus. What about U.S. government stimulus? When we got that last stimulus bill, it almost seemed like it took so long that the market didn't even have a reaction to it. The current bill, I guess we can call it the current bill, it seems to be dragging on too. Is there any significance to the markets or to the metals for this upcoming stimulus bill?
Nah, that doesn't matter. You just print the money, it grows on trees. Why would you bother? I mean, obviously, the market is pricing in things, right? And by the time the announcement comes, you might get the sell-off on the news or whatever it may be. I think it's pretty clear, and some of your viewers might disagree, but for me, it's pretty clear, a recovery is on the way. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to be smooth. There will be setbacks. But and now we're throwing a boatload of money on this. And so we see the consequences, right? Some of it is we'll see on the trading boards where they don't know what to do with the money, right? And again, I'm not suggesting that there aren't many people that desperately need the money and don't have enough. But and then we've done a lot of damage, but there will be an underlying healing. And the way that the economy recovers, we can argue about that, and that maybe it should be a little different, that we shouldn't have killed so many entrepreneurs and small business, especially restaurants and whatnot. But there will be a recovery somewhere, somehow, and that's going to accelerate as we keep pumping money into this. And so in some ways, these stimulus checks, they are really just touching on a symptom. And sure, the larger the stimulus check is, the bigger the boost in short-term spending. But what matters are the structural things that we're going to deal with. And there, it really depends on the regulatory policy we're going to have. And in the meantime, of course, yes, all this money we're spending is going to stick around somehow. It's just going to create ever more instability if and when the Fed does need to raise rates, because the economy just can't stomach higher rates at that point.
Yeah, that's all what we're waiting for, right? What level are these higher rates actually going to matter to the markets, to the Fed? We don't know that answer, but it has been interesting to see the long end rally as much as it has in terms of yields. Axel, great chatting with you again. I recommend following Axel on Twitter at AxelMerck. It's great having you on the show, Axel. I really appreciate your time, and I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
My pleasure.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.